Hi everyone, my name is Jayset Munoz, and today my podcast is going to be about my policy memo. My policy memo is about addressing cartels as national security threats to the United States. Usually, the crimes committed by these groups are just seen in a regional level, but it is actually much bigger than that. That's why, in this podcast, I will explain why cartel activity, like drug trafficking, human trafficking, and dealing with weapons, is such a big problem in the United States, and what we can do about it. To understand the bigger picture, we need some background context. The United States and Mexico share a border, which makes it easier for crime to move between countries. Over time, these cartels have grown a lot, and their crime in the border has also expanded. Because in the past, they were just dealing with drugs or lower crimes. Now they are also involved in human trafficking, armed trafficking, among many other crimes, which they use to finance their networks. One main issue of why these organizations have grown so big and expanded so much, it's because they operate in more than one country. They operate in the US and in Mexico. And usually these countries take an individual approach to the problem, so one country alone cannot fully control the full issue. Also, cartels are highly adaptable, which makes traditional law enforcement way less effective. But the US has shown interest to solve this issue. That is why the US took an approach to it in the most recent published National Security Strategy, mentioning how it was in the best interest of the Western Hemisphere to cooperate with the US on issues such as cartels, drug trafficking, and human smuggling. One of the most important concerning issues for the US is its growing fentanyl crisis. Fentanyl is a man-made drug, therefore it has more dangerous substances in it. Even just 1 kilogram of fentanyl is capable of killing around 500,000 people. That shows how serious is this problem, and it goes beyond national security, but also to public health and people's lives. It is a consistent issue in the US that just keeps growing with time. Just in 2024, fentanyl was the main cause of 60% of overdose deaths in the US. But the issue here is that cartels are not only dealing with drugs, but also they're involved in human trafficking, which is one of the crimes that goes mostly unnoticed or underreported because victims tend to be immigrants from another country, so they are scared to come forward because of their legal status in the US. They are usually scared of police, try to avoid them as much as possible, and also the access to healthcare. And many of the times they suffer from sexual contracted diseases. Creates a bigger public health problem since these cases are not being either reported or treated properly. That is why some clinics and health organizations around the US are trying to improve how they identify and how to report these cases so victims can get the adequate help and support without being shamed. But human trafficking does not always mean that they are trafficked for sexual exploitation. It can also be for the use of labor. What tends to happen in these situations is that citizens from vulnerable and poor countries tend to be approached of bringing them into the US with the promise of a better job, better lives for them and for their families. But what usually happens is that once these people smuggle them into the United States, they take away their passports or make them sign contracts for large amounts of money, which in reality, they're not going to be able to pay back soon. Now, these persons are stuck in a country where they don't speak the same language most of the times. They don't have their passports to go back and are scared of the police. This issue has also been approached from the human rights side because many victims are being constantly exploited and cannot escape these situations. So, drugs are constantly being smuggled into the country as well as persons. But now, changing the scenario, we're going to talk about how guns are being smuggled out of the US and are being sold to these criminal organizations to give them more power. Many of the guns that the cartels use actually come from the United States. So Mexico is not the only problem, but the US also plays a major role here. This exchange is also known as the Iron River Trade. This has been a big issue in Mexico since around 2,100 guns are being smuggled annually. Also, the guns that are being smuggled are most of the time military-style assault rifles, which causes the cartel to have in some situations, more powerful weapons than the U.S. law enforcement agencies. Another thing that makes this issue harder to resolve is the federal laws that protect gun manufacturers, distributors, and dealers from liability when their products are used in crimes. This federal law is known as the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act, also known as the PLCAA, and it was passed in 2005. This leads us to my next point. Here is where I'm going to start giving my policy recommendations. The first option I offered is to label cartels as terrorist organizations, because it is going to allow the United States to use stronger tools and not just rely on normal law enforcement. This approach has been mentioned in the current presidency by Donald Trump, and it is important to take note on the factors that make cartels similar to terrorist organizations, since that link sometimes might be hard to see. So they operate in similar ways, because they use violence, intimidation, and territorial control to achieve their end goals. Even so, in some areas of Mexico, cartels operate almost as if they were their own authority by controlling security, resources, and affecting the daily activities of the citizens. But it is important to mention that terrorist groups most of the time are driven by political or religious motives, while cartels tend to act to obtain an economic gain. But their level of organization and power justify the need for a broader, more strategic response beyond the traditional law enforcement responses. My second recommendation is to strengthen the cooperation between the U.S. and Mexico to address this cartel activity. Because cartels operate in both countries, they can take advantage of the weak areas in the system, such as the lack of communication between the U.S. and Mexican agencies. If both countries establish a relationship based on trust and start sharing their intelligence with one another, it can help track cartels and stop their operations more effectively. Just to point out how big this issue is, just in 2023, 115.6 million fentanyl pills were seized in the border. So to disrupt these trafficking routes and dismantle this organization, there needs to be cooperation from both sides. The U.S. can also offer support to Mexico by offering training, resources, and institutional support to help reduce the corruption that is in the Mexican law enforcement agencies and build strong, non-corrupt police force that can handle these complex operations. At the same time, Mexico will benefit from the ability to reduce their current violence issues at home and outbreaks. It is important to give a hand out to Mexico because even though these operations originate in Mexico and most of the violence is lived there, these organizations tend to extend their networks in the United States. So, addressing them from the root issue can help bring peace and stability to both countries. But for this cooperation to work, it needs to be based on trust. As I mentioned before in the podcast, there are current tensions between the U.S. and Mexico regarding the flow of firearms into Mexico. So the Mexican government has been frustrated and has also tried to sue these gun manufacturers, but they have not been successful due to the U.S. laws. That's why the U.S. can make an intervention and address the flow of weapons, or at least publicly acknowledge the harm that they are doing and how it's boosting the cartels in signs of good faith. My third and final recommendation is to focus on their financial networks. If the government targets the cartel money, they are not going to be able to operate as normally. Some ways that the U.S. can intervene, it can be by imposing financial sanctions, freezing their assets, or blocking their financial transactions, which is an approach that has already been used to weaken terrorist organizations. Recently, the U.S. has taken this step and implemented sanctions against cartel organizations and their leaders. For cartels, it's a harder strike on them to disrupt their profits and economic flow because it is easier for cartels to recover after losing some of its members in confrontations with law enforcement, but it is way harder for them to rebuild their financial networks. Even though the policy recommendations I offer gives the U.S. advantages and help us protect our national security, it is important to always keep in mind that usually these strategies come with risks and trade-offs. Examples, designating cartels as foreign terrorist organizations and implementing this strong military presence on ground can lead to an escalation of violence in the Mexican region. provoke more confrontations between cartels and government forces, which can increase civilian casualties at the end of the day. And also, it can leave vulnerable areas to being risked of cartels taking over them. At the same time, there can be an escalation in the political side. Mexico can see this as a violation of its sovereignty. It can limit the Mexican government's willingness to cooperate with the U.S. authorities in some operations. Even though there is the strong need for a bilateral cooperation, there is no guarantee of success. Because for it to be able to work, governments have to trust each other and on their institutional capacities. But cartels have the power to infiltrate institutions or law enforcement agencies, which highly increases the risk of corruption, therefore reducing the effectiveness of this interagency communication. At the same time, when causing a financial disruption, we need to be aware of the limitations such as time constraints and long-term sustainability challenges. In order to effectively be able to break down these financial networks, we have to take in consideration that it requires coordination among different international partners, multiple agencies, which is a process that can take a really long time to establish. And at the same time, it is giving that time for cartels to adjust their economic operations and start to find some alternative source of income. That is why short-term policies such as the asset freezing, sanctions, lose their grip over time. Another risk of importance is on the Iron River trade, because the complexity of the research shows that only a small fraction of gun dealers, less than 10%, account for the large share of crime-linked firearms. So it means that if the U.S. decided to implement more regulatory approaches, it can have an unintended consequences for the wider legal gun market, since only a portion of them are directly involved with the cartels. At the same time, it can also interfere with economic market activity and affect lawful business and place more economic pressure on dealers who are not participating in this illegal trafficking. That's why, in the end, the most effective and sustainable way is for stronger cooperation between the U.S. and Mexico, because this approach allows them to work together, share information, and address the problem from their root cause. It also avoids unnecessary escalation or Mexican government backlash while still targeting their operations effectively. If cartel activity continues to be treated only as a crime issue, the U.S. can underestimate how serious the threat is. This is why policymakers need to take this issue seriously and act with urgency. I want to end the podcast by saying thank you to everyone who opted into listening to this podcast. I hope this gave you a better understanding of why cartel activity should be seen as a national security issue. Also, feel free to share your thoughts or any questions you may have about the topic. See you on my next podcast. Bye-bye.